Thank you, Libby, for sharing that with us. Very well done. We appreciate it. Christ told his disciples that he would leave them for a time. It's very sad for the disciples to hear the news, but he did promise them that he would come again. And down through the centuries, until now, his people have wondered when. When will he come, as he promised, as he said he would come again? Even after his death, almost immediately there, as he was resurrected and spent some time with his disciples, the 11, and then the choosing of the one to replace Judas, they asked him, "Will you at this time restore the kingdom?" They thought perhaps this is what he was referring to. Jesus knew that we would want to know when he is returning. He wants us to pray for that day, but he said it was not for them to know. But he did give them some things to watch for, to show that that time is close. He said in Luke 21:29, I won't go there, but he said, look at the fig tree. When you see the buds begin to swell and bud out, you know that summer is coming. It's very close to that time. And he said that when you see some of these things that he'd mentioned to them begin to happen, you will know that the time of his return would be close as well. You and I, we wonder when. When will Christ come back? Are we now in the last days? Are we now in that end time we've talked so much about, we've wondered about? Certainly many things are happening. It's looking more and more like that we could be in that time, but we don't know for sure, do we? In a way, we hope so. We do pray that that time is close. I might ask you the question, would you like to know the exact time of Christ's return? Would you like to know the exact time of his return? I'm not saying I'm going to give it to you, but I'm saying, would you like to know? I thought about that, and I said, no, I wouldn't. Because if God said, the Father said, it's not for you to know, I guess that applies for me as well. It'd be better that I didn't know. And I'm sure that if we did know, it would probably cause us more problems than comfort anyway, because we might not use the knowledge wisely anyway. We know that a number of things must happen, first, that haven't yet happened, both to the church, the membership, and in the world, to the people, and to modern Israel. Modern Israel, we know, represents the descendants of Israel, would represent the United States, the British Commonwealth, and that would include, of course, England, Canada, South Africa, and New Zealand, a few others, we believe, are those descendants, as well as the Jewish people. And many scriptures show that, things are going to happen to them that haven't happened yet. So this afternoon, I'd like to review a few of those. And primarily, I'm going to be working from three of the minor prophets. And I usually, when I'm studying the Bible, And recently I've been studying the minor prophets. These are some that I've studied and kind of got an idea that I'd like to speak on those. So I'm going to give you those three. If you want to put markers there, we'll be spending a good bit of time going back and forth. We'll be covering a little bit from the book of Hosea, Habakkuk, and Zephaniah. Let's begin here in Zephaniah chapter 1. I want to point out something here because there's a phrase that's used here that is used throughout the prophecies of the Bible. And let's look at that. Let's look at Zephaniah 1. And we're going to read just quickly through it. And just to make, to point out a particular phrase here that you'll find in so many of the prophecies anyway. We begin in verse 7. Be silent in the presence of the Lord God, for the day of the Lord is at hand. Now, what I want to mention here is we'll see the word in the day, or in that day, or the day of the Lord. And so these are phrases that all are referring to a similar period of time, not only back then, but in the future as well. For the Lord has prepared a sacrifice, has invited his guest, and it shall be in the day of the Lord's sacrifice that I will punish the princes of the king's children, etc. Verse 9, in the same day. So we can see that here in one chapter, you know, that we see that phrase used very frequently. Verse 10, and there shall be on that day, says the Lord, the sound of a mournful cry from the fish gate, a wailing quarter from the second quarter, and a loud crashing from the hills. Again, there's duality here, but let's drop down to verse 12. And it shall come to pass at that time that I will search Jerusalem with lamps and punish the men who are settled in complacency. That's a word that to keep in mind here. We certainly don't want complacency to become a part of our life, spiritually speaking. Who say in their hearts, the Lord will not do good, nor will he do evil. Again, we'll come back to that, but let's go on to verses 14 and 15. The great day of the Lord is near. It is near and hastens quickly. The noise of the day of the Lord is bitter. There the mighty man shall cry out. That day is a day of wrath, a day of trouble and distress, a day of devastation and desolation, a day of darkness and gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness. And he goes on to say, a day of the trumpet and alarm against the fortified cities, and so on. So again, notice how often, you know, these similar phrases are used here in just one chapter. In verse 18, I'll read that also. It says, neither their silver nor their gold shall be able to deliver them in the day of the Lord's wrath. The day of the Lord's wrath. And Paul and the book of Romans spoke of the time of God's wrath. You know, to be aware of that, there is righteous anger, and you know, we'll look at this just briefly here. But what I wanted to mention here in this, in that day, if you did a search on it, you'd find that this phrase is used over 100 verses in the Bible, and the majority of those are prophetic. Some are around ancient events, a large number referred to the end time events, and a similar phrase, the day of the Lord, which primarily refers to one of two events, sometimes includes Christ's return and the establishment of his kingdom. Let me give you a title. I'd like to do that before we go any further. I titled this today, A Brief Review of Some End Time Events. We're going to review those. Now, those two events that I spoke of his return and sometimes the establishment of his kingdom, is included in that. These two events point to the Great Tribulation, and maybe we hold your place here. Let's look at Matthew 24:21. This is a review. That's what it is. And I know these are verses, for the most part, that you'll be very familiar with. Some of them you'll have as even memorized scriptures. But Christ spoke of this time, and you know, you and I, we've discussed it, we've talked about it, we know that we've got to go through some difficult times before we come to the wonderful time of God's kingdom. Matthew 24:21. Christ said, for then will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be, will never be that way again, is what he's referring to there, of course. So we see that it refers to the great tribulation, or also the Lord's wrath and punishment on Gentiles. Let's look at two other prophecies. First of all, Isaiah chapter 13. You know, primarily we'll be working through the verses there in those minor prophets. Minor does not mean that they're less important. It just has to do with the size of the book. But Isaiah 13, verses 9 through 11. Behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel with both wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he will destroy its sinners from it. And he goes on to say, for the stars of heaven and Their constellations will not give their light. It's referring to the, you know, the heavenly signs around that time as well. The sun will be darkened in its going forth. And the moon will not cause its light to shine. I will punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their iniquity. I will halt the arrogance of the proud and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. So he's speaking of the same time that we're referring to here. One other here, we'll go to Ezekiel 30. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel. Ezekiel 30. Just again, we're looking at these phrases, then we'll fill in some, you know, a few blanks here. Certainly there are many, many other things that could be covered, but just a few things to look at. I think it'll be a good review. It'll be interesting for us to give thought to here. Ezekiel 30. And let's see, yeah, verse 3. He'd said, woe, woe to the day. And then he said, verse 3, for the day is near. Even the day of the Lord is near. It will be a day of clouds, the time of the Gentiles. So I wanted to tie that in as well. Yeah, kind of a general way, and we can't say that that applies in every scripture. But a general way of looking at this period of time is that God punishes. In fact, we might be turning over to Romans chapter 2. God punishes Israel, the descendants of Israel, first, and then he punishes the Gentiles. Let's go to Romans 2. Romans chapter 2, Paul writing to the churches in Rome, and we'll notice a statement that he made here, again referring to that period of time, indirectly anyway. So it is a time of God's righteous anger, you know, at sin, the cruelty of humans to each other. And he's going to bring it to an end. You know, obviously, you've been parents. If you see one of your own children mistreat one of their brothers or sisters, you know, that makes you a little angry at them. And sometimes you step in and you will punish them. Don't treat your sister that way. You're being very cruel to her. And God feels the same way about his children also. Let's look at Romans chapter 2. Again, I'm going to read through it quickly. It speaks in break in the middle of a sentence here. It speaks of God, verse 6, who will render to each one according to his deeds. You know, Galatians says, what you sow, you'll reap. You know, sometimes it's later, but God's going to see that that will happen. Eternal life to those who by patient continuance in doing good seek for glory, honor, and immortality. But to those who are self-seeking and do not obey the truth but obey unrighteousness, indignation and wrath, tribulation and anguish on every soul of man who does evil, of the Jew first and also of the Greek. You know, we've looked at this in the past and say, you know, certainly in verse 11, there's no partiality with God. You know, God will punish the Jew or Israel first because he gave us his law, his blessings. He worked with us as a people, not with the rest of the world in the same way. So he holds Israel more accountable, and they'll be punished first in this day of the Lord or this time we're speaking of here, and that'll be followed by the punishment of the Gentiles. You know, again, so let's go back now to Hosea chapter 4. In Hosea 4, Israel was God's chosen people. And so he holds them accountable and takes them into accounting here first. So let's look at Hosea 4, verses 1 through 3. Hear the word of the Lord, you children of Israel, for the Lord brings a charge against the inhabitants of the land. And it's almost like a courtroom situation. Here are the charges. And let's look at the evidence. You know, God is justified in his correction, his punishment of our people. There's no truth or mercy or knowledge of God in the land. And just take a brief thought about these statements here. Is there truth lacking in our country today? Is there mercy lacking in our country today? How about the knowledge of God? You know, doesn't this very well describe the condition of our people sadly, here in the United States, as we're turning away and even becoming hostile to anything that speaks of God and of his way of life. You know, we don't trust people anymore. We wish we could. You know, we wish we could go to a car dealer and he tells you this used car is a good one here. And, oh, okay, good. You say it is. I'll take your word for it. Well, not necessarily. And that could be true of a lot of things as well. But he says in verse 2, by swearing and lying, killing and stealing and committing adultery. Again, describing what we see all around us here. They break all restraint with bloodshed upon bloodshed. Horrible crime, you know, that is filling our land, and especially the big cities. You know, how many people are killed overnight in Chicago and New York and so many other places, even here in this city as well, that you don't feel safe in certain parts of the city. You don't feel safe without locking your house up real good at night. Therefore, the land will mourn, and everyone who dwells there will waste away, with the beast of the field and the birds of the air and the fish of the sea will be taken away. Yeah, I don't want to go too fast through these verses because we need to look at, you know, what it's saying here and say, is this describing our nation today? The land will mourn. I thought it was interesting. I was watching after the election. It was kind of a shock to a lot of people, and some of the news analysts were, you know, kind of describing, well, why did America vote the way they did with a landslide for Mr. Trump almost? And one analyst said that he had seen surveys that said 70% of American people felt that our nation was going in the wrong direction. 70%. And he thought that, well, you know, the previous administration weren't turning it around. Maybe we'll try this one and see if it'll turn it around. The land is mourning. I think a lot of people are sad because they see a lot of the good things of the past are gone and they're not likely coming back. And it speaks of, you know, as I was reading, it says, even the fish of the sea will be taken away. And you know that there are a lot of the areas of the ocean where there was an abundance of good fish. They're just not there anymore. You know, we've polluted the land, we've polluted the air, and we've just used the oceans and seas as a dumping ground for plastics and everything else and overfishing. But let's move on here. Notice verse 6. My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. Well, would knowledge, are we at the place with the good knowledge, would it solve the problems? It wouldn't. Because people, as he goes on to say, because you've rejected knowledge. People don't want to hear the solution to the problem. They don't have the patience to work with what we know would be a solution. Because you've rejected knowledge, I will also reject you from being priest, you know, holding the spiritual leadership, should be of the nation, accountable. He goes on to say, because you've forgotten the law of your God, I also will forget your children. You know, and that's an ominous thing to think about. It's one thing, you know, I think of myself, and I think of what's coming. You know, my life is pretty much over. You know, I've had a good life and blessed with a good life, but I think of my children and my grandchildren and what they're going to have to face. And I don't want my children to be in a position to be rejected by God. I don't want him to forget my children. You know, it says, you know, pray that you be accounted worthy to escape. And I do that, but even more, I pray that my children will be accounted worthy to escape and that my grandchildren will as well, because, you know, I see that it could be even more severe on them. Let's look at chapter 9 and verse 17. And we're just primarily going to look at a few of the things that are mentioned here in some of these minor prophets and tie in two or three other things from other places as well. Chapter 9 and verse 17, my God will cast them away because they did not obey him, and they shall be wanderers among the nation. And, you know, this statement about being punished because of rejecting God's law and not obeying his commandments is a theme throughout all the prophecies. And it's astounding that people would say, you don't have to keep the law anymore. You know, that, and God says, you know, you have the Bible, you have the scriptures, you know, at least if you don't read them, that, you know, between good and evil, and the way you should treat other people, and you're not doing that. And he says that's the reason that he'll cast them away. But notice the second part of chapter 17, and they shall be wanderers among the nations. And you and I know that, and we'll touch on a little bit of that in a few minutes here, he's talking about, you know, as a nation will be conquered, and a certain percentage of our people will go into captivity, and they'll be sold as slaves into other countries. And they'll be slaves for a period of time there. You know, this is what eventually is leading to. God is long-suffering. He sees, but God never punishes without a warning first, and also with revealing why I'm going to punish you. It'd be ridiculous for me as a parent to snatch my child up and punish him and didn't know, why am I being punished? There's no lesson learned from that. You know, it has to be a lesson in the correction. Otherwise, what good would it be? So he will some way make known to all of why, you know, this punishment is falling upon them. Let's go back to chapter 7, Hosea 7, and look at verse 14. It says, they did not cry out to me with their hearts. And it says, when they wailed upon their beds. And obviously, you know, there are other places in both all of these that show Israel, some of them cry out to God, but they also continue to practice the traditions of men and the pagan ways that have been passed down through the generations, a form of religion called syncretism, mixing, you know, some of the things of the Bible with pagan ways anyway. Now, I want to go back just briefly here to what Moses spoke. God inspired, was spoken through Moses and to Moses in Deuteronomy 28. Deuteronomy chapter 28. And do you remember, you know, one of our memory scriptures is, there are two blessing and cursing chapters that speak of blessings and curses. You remember which ones they are? Of course, you remember Deuteronomy 28. We're going there now. What, anyone remember the other one? Anyone quickly? Leviticus 26. That's right. That's good. So they both are similar. Of course, one given much earlier than the other one. This Deuteronomy 28 was given at the end of the 40 years, kind of a reminder to the children who survived the 40 years through the wilderness. The same instruction was still upon them as upon their forefathers, upon all of man, of course. So he spoke of the two choices. He said, if you obey me, I will bless you. If you disobey me, you will suffer these curses. Let's just look at just a few here. And again, as I read this, don't look at them just as some ancient, you know, proclamation, but ask, do I see any of this happening to our people today? Deuteronomy 28, we're going to look at verse 15 to begin here. It shall come to pass, if you do not obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all his commandments and his statutes, which I command you today, that, you know, there are a couple of words when you're reading the Bible, you might watch for if that or if then. And so, you know, that's a cause and effect, so to speak. It says that all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. That's an interesting word as well, overtake you. Now, what's chasing you? There are the places in the Bible, you know, that sin is chasing you, or good is chasing you, or blessings is chasing you. You know, that so you'll be chased by these curses. Curses, he says here, verse 16, cursed shall you be in the city, so your city will no longer be a pleasant place to live, and cursed shall you be in the country, in the countryside as well. You know, I grew up in a farming community. My nearest neighbor was a half mile away, and You know, it was such a pleasant place to grow up in. But of all things, drugs has even come into this farming community and other problems as well, as we'll see a few of them as we keep reading a few verses here. Let's drop down to verse 23. Again, I'm not going to spend a lot of time here, but a little bit anyway. Verse 23. And your heavens which are over your head shall be bronze, and the earth which is under your feet shall be iron. So what is that speaking of, bronze and iron? Well, bronze means there won't be any clouds in it, you know, that will bring the rain. We used to, when I was growing up on a farm, you know, rain is so critical. And we'd get our crops in, and then the summer would come, and you'd be looking at the sky, and you'd be watching for clouds to develop. I don't know how many times my father and mother and I would sit on the front porch after we got the corn and the cotton stuff, what we call laid by, and watch the sky, and you see a thunderstorm develop, and it'd be over the timber, and think, is it going to make it into the farmland? And you come on, make it. And a lot of times it wouldn't. And you go down to the farm, you see this beautiful patch of corn, and it's beginning to twist up with heat and drought. And it's almost like you feel like the corn has feelings, and you know it doesn't, but it's like you see animals that are hurting. And it just hurts you to see the crops that are affected, you know, as the clouds don't bring the rain. Of course, verse 24 gets into that as well. The Lord will change rain of your land to powder and dust from the heaven, and shall come down on you until you are destroyed. So it speaks there of one of the curses of disobedience would be the lack of rain. There are other places that should be rain at the wrong time, or maybe too much rain as well, flooding or drought, one or the other. So let's read now verse 32. If you read between these verses, you know, it speaks of, you know, some of the other problems that would happen. But verse 32, your sons and your daughters shall be given to another people, and your eyes shall look and fall with longing for them all day long. There shall be no strength in your hands. This speaks of the time of the conquest of the land and the sons and daughters being taken into captivity there. It goes on to speak of, again, in these verses here, of mental problems. You know, and as I was reading this, you know, I thought, do we as a people have, you know, psychological issues, mental problems, you know, that, and we do, you know, suicide has increased tremendously. Interestingly, this past week, I have a website I go to every day to kind of pick up on some of the news and other items, and it has in there what is called Fact Retriever. And this week, there was one called the word boanthropy. Now, what does that mean? It says it's a psychological disorder where people think they're cows. You know, that provided by factretriever.com. Now, we think, you know, that's ridiculous. But do people today think they're an animal? They do. You know, I mean, this transgender stuff has just morphed into all kinds of issues and problems of our young people. Horrible. You know, the parents don't say, straight up, child or son or daughter, you're not that. Don't even think that anymore. You are what you were born. You know, and to help them through these times, but they give in to it. And, of course, our government sadly, is supportive of that. Let's read a little more here. Verses 43 and 44. The alien who is among you shall rise up higher and higher above you, and you shall come down lower and lower. So God said, the stranger, the Gentile among you, is what it's saying, will rise up higher and higher, and you will come down lower and lower. You know, and I don't think, you know, we should understand, it says, I think it's in Deuteronomy 17, that when you choose a king, it should be one of your own people. An Israelite should be the king of Israel. But this shows a reverse of those things. Verse 44, he shall lend to you, but you shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. Yeah. We look back, I remember about 50 or 60 years ago, the United States was sending foreign aid to countries all over the world. And now we're borrowing, you know, to uphold, you know, the dollar, so to speak. So, again, a reversal of these things. So these things, you know, we should realize are already happening on a large scale and getting more and more that way. Let's look at 49 through 52. The Lord will bring a nation against you from afar, from the end of the earth, as swift as the eagle flies, a nation whose language you will not understand. And we have taught, we believed as a church, that this is speaking of the United States, England, and others being attacked by a foreign nation, and maybe a group of nations led by one powerful nation. And it says it comes as swift as the eagle. I know you've heard the word blitzkrieg, you know, the swift attack, like happened in World War II. It's going to happen again. And it says here that, let me read. He says, whose language you will not understand. And again, will it be the German language? You know, again, we think that certainly could be, very likely would be, as the leader there. I give you a little bit of a humorous thing here. I don't know. You know, in Ambassador College, when we went to Ambassador College many years ago, we were required to take a foreign language. And they wouldn't accept Southern as a foreign language, so I had to choose something else anyway. And I thought, well, what language do I want to take? Spanish would have been good. Well, I don't want Spanish. Well, let's see. French, pardon me, but, and I'm wrong now because, you know, my son and daughter are fluent in French. But at the time, I thought French is too feminine. You know, so I said, I don't want French. And I thought, well, what about German? And I thought, well, if the German's going to take us over, I think I should take German. I'll pretend I don't know what they're, you know, saying. So that was poor reasoning on my part anyway. So I took German in college. I'm surprised how much I still remember of German. I had a few conversations with people and when I went to France, that some of the ones from Switzerland and other areas there that spoke German also. I could speak just a little bit anyway. Enough to ask for a drink of Wasser, but Das Bier or whatever. Well, let me get back to this. Let's see, 48. He says in verse 50, a nation whose a fierce countenance, which does not respect the elderly nor show favor to the young. Just a brief comment on that. What happened in the Holocaust is the Jews were transported in. You know, they were lined up. The Germans would look at them. Let's see, this one looks healthy enough, old enough. I mean, you know, he's old enough to work. Send him into the work group for a while. This one's too old, and this one's too young. Send them to the ovens. And so they don't have any respect for the elder or the young. You know, that happened. You know, in that period of time anyway. Let's read on. And they shall eat the increase of your livestock, the produce of your land, until you're destroyed. They shall not save you grain or leave you grain or new wine or oil at the increase of your cattle or the offspring of your flocks. Until they destroyed you, they shall besiege you at all your gates until your high and fortified walls in which you trust come down throughout all your land, and they shall besiege you at all your gates throughout all your land which the Lord your God has given you. Now, the besieging you in all your gates, we know certainly that can apply militarily, but we've also felt it apply, could apply to trade war. And I don't know whether it's significant or not, but I thought it's quite interesting that Mr. Trump says he's going to double tariffs on a lot of countries. You know, Mexico was one. Even today, Prime Minister of Canada is down to talk about tariffs, so to I understand. So will it trigger a trade war? Yeah, I think that's something for us to keep our eyes on anyway. So let's go to Jeremiah chapter 5. I know it's been on a lot of our minds as we've seen a change of administration here. How is that going to impact the world? How is it going to impact the United States? You know, we're going to have to just wait and see, aren't we? We don't know for sure. That thus says the Lord God of hosts, verse 14, verse 15, behold, I'll bring a nation against you from afar, from a long way off, O house of Israel, says the Lord God. It is a mighty nation. It is an ancient nation. Its history goes way back. A nation whose language you do not know, nor can you understand what they say. Again, you know, this certainly we understand would be applied and understood to the future of this country who've rejected God over and over and over. Let's go to Isaiah 10. And I know you understand that there's duality in prophecy. Some of these apply to a time back then, obviously, but they also apply to a time in the future because many of them include a time, again, we could go to many examples, when David will be alive again, when Christ will rule on the earth, included in the prophecies, and those have never yet happened. Isaiah chapter 10. Isaiah 10. This, again, is a prophecy we covered a number of times in the past of how Mr. Armstrong taught and others at that time that God would use Assyria again to punish modern Israel. And we believe that the Assyrians were the ancient forefathers of the German people. And so, as God has allowed some of the Gentile nations to be used to punish his people, sometimes they take it further than they should. And so he turns to punish them afterward as well. And so we see here in Isaiah chapter 10 and verse 5, woe to Assyria, the rod of my anger, and the staff in whose hand is my indignation. The rod of my anger, the staff in my hand. So God is saying here, I have used you know, to be my punishing tool. So God uses Assyria to punish his people again in the future, as he, of course, did in the past. And it says, I'll send him against an ungodly nation, against the people of my wrath. I will give him charge to seize the spoil, to take the prey, and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. Yet he does not mean so. Assyria didn't mean to be used by God, just as Nebuchadnezzar didn't think, well, I'm being used by God, you know, to correct the Jewish people, then Assyria doesn't see themselves as a tool of God. But he doesn't think that's it. He thinks it's his own greatness. But it is in his heart to destroy and cut off not a few nations, for he says. And I won't read you further. You can read the rest of this. But God is saying, look, you've been used by me, but now I'm going to punish you because you're certainly unrighteous in your conduct as well, an evil people. Let's go back to Hosea now. Hosea chapter 8. I want to touch on something that we mentioned, or we read there in Deuteronomy 28. Just a kind of a little interesting side point about drought, because it is mentioned in several of the minor prophets also. And as we turn back to Hosea 8, what damage does drought do? If someone said, well, God's bringing drought, well, what does it do? How does it hurt people? What would you answer? Pardon? Okay, drought prevents the crops from growing, right? So you're going to have a food shortage. That's the most obvious thing about drought. But there's something else as well that drought causes. And interesting, the scriptures speak of that as well. What else does the drought cause? It causes fires, doesn't it? And we ask, have we had any fire problems in the United States? Let's look at Hosea 8, verses 13 and 14. For the sacrifices of my offerings and offerings, they sacrifice flesh and eat it, but the Lord does not accept them. He doesn't accept their worship. Again, their hearts are not where it should be. Nor will he remember their iniquity and punish this. Now he will remember their iniquity and punish their sins. They shall return to Egypt. That's an interesting statement. What do you mean they'll return to Egypt? Will that happen in the future? Well, there are other scriptures that show that the Egyptians will be buying slaves. And that's the way they'll return in captivity. In the first captivity, and when they released, they didn't return. Let's read verse 14. For Israel has forgotten his maker and has built temples. Judah has also multiplied fortified cities. But I will send fire upon his cities, and it shall devour his palaces or his beautiful homes. My cousin and I were in Ambassador College many years ago. He was an instructor in tennis. He said, "Bruce, do you want to go down the coast of California there and drive down the highway to near San Diego, the beach there, and go swimming and on the beach on Sunday?" I said, "Well, sure." He said, "Well, we'll leave Saturday night." So we got our sleeping bags, dumped them in his car, and took off down the coastal highway there. And it was getting late at night, about 12 o'clock, so we need to find a place to sleep. And so we saw this, here's Malibu. We'll pull over and go to the beach there. So we pull over and run over the cliff there to the beach in Malibu. It was nothing but rocks and cliffs. That wasn't a good place to sleep. But anyway, Malibu was a place that had beautiful homes. And, of course, they've been hit by fires. Just in the past couple of weeks or so. We drove on down a little further and saw another little road, dirt road, leading out to the beach and pulled into that. Beautiful beach, your waves rolling in, the phosphorus in the waves lighting up, and put our sleeping bags out and went to sleep and woke up the next morning about sunrise of this plane coming around and looked up and it was a military plane. Single engine, and we looked around, and there were these tank tracks in the sand there, and there was a block buildings where they were doing fire practice at them. We could see the black soot on the pillboxes there, so to speak. We said, "We better get out of here. We're on a military base," and we threw our sleeping bag in the car and took off and went on down to San Diego. But I just want to mention, of course, Malibu there, which is one of the cities that's been hit by fires just recently, and beautiful homes of many people. It's sad. You don't want anyone's home to be destroyed. But that's what was happening and is happening now. Let's look at Hosea Joel, and Joel 1 and verse 20. I'll just pick up one verse here. The beast of the field also cry out to you, for the water brooks are dried up, and fire has devoured the open pastures. Is that prophetic? And to me, it seems to be. And it seems to be, perhaps we are seeing the beginning of some of these things. Time will tell, of course. But we're not there yet, are we? The shopping malls are full. If you want to go to a nice restaurant on the weekend, you have to stand in line. You know that there are thousands of people going out on Friday and Saturday nights to the expensive restaurants. The highways are filled with new or nearly new cars. That I've had the privilege of going to Africa 3 times, and you know, in Nigeria, Zimbabwe, Malawi. And as I was thinking about, you know, where are we? We look at, looks like we're very prosperous as a nation. And there were over 100 people at the feast there in Africa. And of over 100 attendees, over 100, 2 people owned cars. 2 out of 100. And those are old ones. One was breaking down, and he kept trying to repair it. He was helping other people. One of the elders had an old car there. So different. But, and then you drive by the homes here, and I was, you know, as I was thinking about this, in my neighborhood, and I look at the driveway, and most homes have 2 cars. 2 cars sitting in the driveway. And again, very nice cars. But you know, most of those cars are bought on credit. In many cases, if you ask people, a lot of them are bought on credit. You know, we're not hit hard yet, but it's on the horizon. Let's look at Isaiah 1, verse 22. I meant to bring something today, and I forgot to stick it in my pocket. I'll mention that to you in just a minute. Isaiah 1 and verse 22. Your silver has become dross. Your wine mixed with water, watered down, is what he's saying here. I want to focus just briefly on your silver has become dross. Again, I gave up my bedroom with all my things in it, you know, to my family. But I was going to show you a coin. If you pull out a coin, a quarter, a dime, you'll see that only the outside has a silver color. It's called a sandwich coin. I know a lot of our young people don't realize that. But several years ago, the coins were made of silver. You know, I brought several to Gainesville last week. You know, the dime, almost pure silver. Quarter, half dollar, silver dollar, silver. But they don't make them anymore. They make sandwich coins. Your silver has become dross. I believe that's what it's referring to. You know, that our wealth is slowly going away here. That let's go to Habakkuk 2, Habakkuk chapter 2. I think if we give thought to it, if we study into it, we'll realize that our wealth and our possessions are built on not something very firm so far as wealth is concerned. I'll speak of that more, but I want to read this first in Habakkuk 2 and verse 6. Will not all these take up a proverb against him and a taunting riddle against him and say, woe to him who increases what is not his? How long? What does it mean to increase what is not his? And to him who loads himself with many pledges. I think that's saying that I can't afford it yet. I'll buy it on credit. And you know, read the last part of verse 6. pledges the credit card. I believe that our prosperity as a nation and as individuals is built on a false prosperity. It's not on a solid prosperity. I looked up some statistics here, and it's kind of hard to come up with exactly, you know, what is accurate here. But let me share just a few with you. This is from Forbes. It says, in third quarter 2024, we Americans owed 1 2/10 trillion, says it grew by 24 billion in the third quarter, a new record. It's the highest on record of the personal debt. And again, we're talking about credit cards here briefly. Forbes says over 25% are still paying off last year's purchases. The average credit card debt in America is almost $8,700. That's based on 2024 data from the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Census Bureau. But that is only the credit card. Credit card debt varies among people due to their age, their income, other factors, but it only makes up a fraction of the personal debt. There's student loans, there's car payments, there's mortgage on houses, and here's, I'm going to give you some figures here, but again, it's hard for me to nail down exactly here, but it says the average consumer's debt in America is $104,215. That's from the USA Today. $104,215. Here's what MarketWatch says. The total household debt, putting it all together, the second quarter 24, is $17.8 trillion, which is a new high for the United States. So, yes, we appear to be prosperous on the outside, but it looks like a lot of it is built on credit anyway. Let's go back to Zephaniah 1. Zephaniah 1, or forward, I should say. Zephaniah 1, we'll look at verse 5 and 6. Again, I'm just touching on a few things here. You know, Christ said over and over that we need to watch. We don't set dates, but we do watch what's going on, and not to be caught unawares, so to speak. Zephaniah chapter 1, verses 5 and 6. Those who worship the host of the heaven on housetops, those who worship and swear oaths by the Lord, but also swear by Milcom, those who have turned back from following the Lord and have not sought the Lord nor inquired of him. So here he speaks of those who worship on housetops. Now, we know that it's speaking of an early form of astrology. You know, that is where people believe that the stars and constellations have power to influence and control our lives, our destiny, you know, leading to a form of worship of the heavenly bodies. What I want to point out here, that as a nation, we've mixed paganism with a form of Christianity. We'll come to that in just a minute here. But look at what, you know, do we have people on housetop today worshiping the sun, the stars? Do you see anything on the housetops today? You know, I mean, do you see any, a man in a red suit, you know, and they light up all around the house? Is there a spinoff of that? You know, we may not, not everybody may be on the housetop worshiping the heavenly stars and sun, moon, whatever, but certainly we fill our housetops in the nation and our yards with another form of paganism. And in God's sight, it's just as bad. You know, that let's notice Hosea 2. Hosea chapter 2. Notice verses 11 Verse 11, I will also cause all her mirth to cease, her feast days, her new moons, her Sabbaths, all her appointed feast. And I will destroy her vines and her fig trees, and these are my wages that my lovers have given me, that they say, so I'll make them a forest and it will make beasts of the field. And I will punish her for the days of the Baals to which she burned incense. She decked herself with her earrings and jewelry. She went after her lovers, but she forgot me. So here it speaks of the days of Baal. Now this is speaking of the holidays that we have today. You know, go back to paganism, false worship. Let's go to chapter 5. Chapter 5. Notice verse 5 here. Blow the ram's horn in Gibeah, the trumpet in Ramah. Cry aloud at Beth-Aven. Look among behind you, O Benjamin. Ephraim shall be desolate in the day of rebuke among the tribes of Israel. I make known what is sure. Now, I'm sorry, let me go back to verse 5. It says, the pride of Israel testifies to his face, that therefore Israel and Ephraim shall stumble in their iniquity. Judah shall also stumble with them. Now let's, verse 7, they dealt treacherously with the Lord. They'd begotten pagan children. Now new moon shall devour them and their heritage. Just take a quick look. They had begotten pagan children. We pass these teachings on to our children of paganism. I visited a young couple many years ago, and they were so excited about the things they're reading in our literature. This is way back in worldwide time. You know, all these things are so interesting, so exciting. You know, the things we're reading in the Plain Truth magazine. And they were just filled with enthusiasm. And I think it was with assisting either Mr. Bald or Mr. McNair at that time. But somehow the word Christmas came up in the conversation. And the mother of two small children, her face that was filled with enthusiasm, suddenly drained. Yeah. She got pale. She quit smiling. She looked at us and said, my children will not be different from the rest of the children. And that's where the visit kind of ended. You know, yeah, I'm not going to teach my children not to keep these days. So we make a big deal of it. That notice verse 11. Ephraim, or Israel, is oppressed and broken in judgment because he willingly walked by human precept. Again, the pagan days, traditions of men, the human teachings contrary to God. Well, let's look at Hosea 4. Hosea chapter 4. Verses 16 and 17. For Israel is stubborn, like a stubborn calf. Now the Lord will let them forage like a lamb in open country. Ephraim has joined idols. Let him alone. Verse 16 and 17 is God says, look, I'm going to back off. You know, I've watched over these people, these nations, all these years. Now I'm going to just let them go out and forage in the field on their own. If you turn the sheep out in the field and no protector, you know, the wolves, the predators are coming. And so God says, I've been your protector as a nation. I'm leaving you alone. See what it's like to not have my protection in your life. You know, those would be some of the worst words to hear God to say to Christ, just leave them alone. Let them go their own way. See what happens. And that's, that's what has happened. Let's notice verse 15. I will return again to my place till they acknowledge their offense. Then they will seek my face in their affliction. They will earnestly seek me. So, God leaves us to our own way without his protection, and our enemies will move in, and the great tribulation will begin. Can you imagine what the Arab people are going to do when God's protection is not over the Jewish people? It's going to be a horrible, sad time because they're so hated by their neighbors. And when God allows this to happen, it's going to be a sad time for the people then. You know, God says, I take no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but there comes a time that our people refuse correction, so he turns away, he leaves them alone. It ultimately brings our people to repentance. All the prophecies throughout the Bible show that Israel and Judah is in captivity just before Christ's return. Let's notice Zephaniah 3. Zephaniah chapter 3. And verses 18 through 20. He says, I will gather those who sorrow over the appointed assembly who are among you, to whom its reproach is a burden. So there are those among our people who are sad at what's happening, and God is going to watch over them. Behold, at that time I'll deal with all who afflict you. I will save the lame and gather those who were driven out. I'll appoint them for praise and fame in every land where they were put to shame. And at that time I'll bring you back. Even at that time I gather you. I'll give you fame and praise among all the peoples of the earth when I return your captives before your eyes. So here is kind of a cycle of working through that period of time called in that day or at that time. Let me just, and I'm going to skip some things here because of time, but just very quickly as a review here, let's go to, hold your place here in Zephaniah, but let's go to Revelation chapter 11. Revelation 11. And I'll ask you the question here, and I know you can answer it. How long is the great tribulation and the day of the Lord? Anyone? Okay, we're going to say 3.5 years. Okay, let's look at just some scriptures very quickly here. I'm not going to get into any kind of explanation of them, but just to point out that period of time. Revelation 11. Revelation 11, verses 2 and 3. But leave out the court which is outside the temple, and do not measure it. It has been given to the Gentiles, and they shall tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months. So here's the time of the end, and when God allows the Gentile nations to overrun a part of the city of Jerusalem. And so, just wanted to point out the 42 months is how long? 3.5 years, isn't it? And I'll give power to my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days. Again, 30 months in a prophetic, in God's prophetic reckoning of time, 30 days in a month. So again, that's 3.5 years, 1,260 days. Let's go to chapter 12. Here we see the chapter that shows that God is going to work something out to protect some of his people, the church, at the time of the end. Then the woman fled in the wilderness where she has a place prepared by God that they should feed her there 1,260 days. Again, the same period of time. So think of all these things that are happening during that same period of time, verse 14 of Revelation 12. But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle. We know that the woman there, prophetically is speaking of the church, and that she might fly in the wilderness to her place where she is nourished for a time, times, and half a time from the presence of the serpent or Satan and those he's using, of course. So again, time, times and a half of time, we see it as referring to the 3.5 years there at the time of the end. Chapter 13 and verse 5. And here is the beast power who is in power at that time. He was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemy, and was given authority to continue for 42 months. So here's this Gentile power, the resurrection of the Roman Empire, who's allowed to be in power for 3.5 years. So we see that, and let's go back to Hosea 5. I'm going to touch on something here, and as I said, I'm running out of time here, so I'm not going to elaborate on it. But it is just something, you know, to look at, to think about, and so far as the time coming in the future. Let's notice Hosea 5, Hosea chapter 5, and notice verse 6. With their flocks and herds they shall go to seek the Lord, but they will not find him. You know, here in trouble, they begin to turn to God. He allows them to suffer for a period of time. He has withdrawn himself from them. They dealt treacherously with the Lord. They've begotten pagan children. Now a new moon shall devour them and their heritage. Now, the new moon there in the King James Version, and again, this is just a thought, and again, in the past, that, you know, there's been questions about the new moon. In the King James Version, it refers, a month shall devour them. And of course, chapter 6 talks about their release. I don't have time to go into that, but I would like to just tie in something again, something to think about, not saying that it is absolutely the way this is intended to be understood, but just something to keep in mind. Let's go to Daniel 12, in Daniel chapter 12, because Daniel was given some prophecies of the time of the end as well. And he spoke of a time here in Daniel 12, verses 8 through 13. Daniel was told in verse 4 to shut up the prophecies. They would be sealed until the time of the end. In verse 8, I heard, but I did not understand. And I said, my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? He said, go your way, Daniel, they are sealed. Words are closed and they're sealed till the time of the end. Many shall be purified, made white, refined. But the wicked shall do wickedly, none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. And from the time that the daily sacrifice, so it indicates that there certainly is likely going to be sacrifices begun in among the Jews again, be taken away, an abomination of desolation set up, which Christ said to be a sign, shall be 1,290 days. Blessed who waits until the 1,335 days. So, you know, we've wondered about the 30 days or the extra month there in Hosea. You know, how does this tie in? The 1260 plus 30 is 1290. And here's just something, again, it's just thoughts, it's not saying absolutely. But the church will need a period of time to be warned, and a time to flee those that God chooses to protect. And there also be a certain amount of time that it will take for the nation to fall and be taken into captivity. So do the extra days here, you'll tie in with that. Again, it's certainly a possibility. Let's go to Habakkuk 2. We're going to bring this to a close here. Habakkuk chapter 2. And again, I'll ask you a question, just some thought. Habakkuk 2, and of course, this is quoted also in the book of Hebrews, but we'll just read the one here. Habakkuk 2, in verse 4. Behold the proud, his soul is not upright him, but the just shall live by his faith. I want you to notice that it says his faith. Not just by faith, but by his faith. We each will be living by our own faith, not the faith of our parents, our mates, you know, our best friend, but it's going to fall on our shoulders. I believe it will be a time when our faith, our personal, individual faith, will be tested. It was for the prophets at times. You know, they were, you know, Zephaniah, Jeremiah said, "Oh Lord, how long? Why? Why are these things happening?" You know that, and it'll be easy if we're not careful. If things don't happen when or the way we hoped for or prayed about, we can drift into a negative way of viewing God. You know, why wasn't my mate healed? Why wasn't my child healed? Why am I not being healed? I asked God to heal me. Can we trust him? Do we have the faith to do so? You know, that's important. You know, that in Zephaniah, I won't go to Zephaniah 1, verse 12, but it shows that the people there will come to a time when they say, God is not near, he's not doing anything now. You know, maybe I should read it, Zephaniah 1 and verse 12. At that time come to pass that I'll search Jerusalem and with lamps and punish the men who are settled in complacency, who say in their heart, the Lord will not do good, nor will he do evil. He doesn't do anything. He doesn't punish. He doesn't bless. He's a God away off somewhere. He doesn't answer my prayers the way I want them answered. That's going to be a test for some people. I asked some members just recently, as we were sitting around in their house, which commandment do you think members break the most? You know, they thought, I said, well, which commandment do the people in the world break? No. Which commandment do members fail in maybe more than any other? You know, that's for each of us personally to answer for ourselves. You know, is there any area that we are compromising in our personal lives? And I know there's some, I've seen some who are. If we're compromising now, it's likely our faith will not sustain us through the hard times. You know, Christ said, I pray that your faith will not fail you. How strong is your faith now? How strong will it be then? Let's conclude by going to Habakkuk chapter 3. This is what Habakkuk said. Habakkuk 3, verses 1 and 2. The prophet of Habakkuk, on Chickenot, said, O Lord, I've heard your speech and was afraid. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. He said in chapter 2 and verse 1, I will stand my watch and set myself on the rampart and watch and see what he will say to me. To me, this is my message. Verse 2, I will stand my watch. What does God want me to do? What is my work? What does he expect of me? Chapter 2 and verse 1 is what I must do and continue to do. Blessed is he who finds that Christ finds coming. When he comes, find so doing. And finally, verses 16 through 19, Habakkuk 3, 16 through 19. When I heard, my body trembled, my lips quivered at the voice, rottenness entered my bones, and I trembled in myself that I might rest in the day of trouble. When he comes up to the people, he will invade them with troops. And then he said, though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit on the vines, though the labor of the olive may fail, and the fields yield no food, though the flocks may be cut off from the fold and there be no herd in the stalls. Though I see all these problems, whether directly on me, whether on the country, when I see these things, I'll keep my eyes on God. Yet, verse 18, I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord is my strength. He'll make my feet like deer's feet. He'll make me walk on high hills. I trust him. No matter how it looks, personally or in the nation, I trust God. I may not always understand why he chooses to do something the way he does, but I know it's best, even though I may not know it at the time. So no matter what, we must hold fast and cling to and stay zealous, spiritually hungry. God will never leave us, never forsake us. He'll take care of us. Great things await us on the other side of these terrible times that'll be coming on our people.